Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram.
FingerLakes1.com. I'm Josh Durso, and this is Inside the FLX. It is time for our monthly check-in with Chris Tedeschi from the Montezuma Autobahn Center in Savannah, Wayne County. Chris, thanks for being here today.
Good to be with you, Josh.
So, Bald Eagle survey results. We are halfway through winter, basically. How did that go, and what did it look like?
Yeah, earlier this month, we had about 30 staff and volunteers fan out all across the Montezuma Wetlands Complex looking for bald eagles. We were looking for adult eagles as well as juveniles. The people that came out to help with this very important annual survey were looking in these areas from Cayuga Lake all the way up to the south shore of Lake Ontario. And really happy to announce that we found 66 bald eagles all across this area. That is above our 10-year running average of about 56 birds found during a bald eagle survey. And when you look back 10, 15 years ago, we were regularly counting about 40 bald eagles during this survey. Very impressive number.
Yeah.
But now we're regularly counting 70-ish bald eagles.
That's incredible.
So again, a testament to conservation efforts, protecting habitats, and the bald eagles are responding to that. So wherever people go, whether it's down at the National Wildlife Refuge, up on the state land in Savannah, they come to the Audubon Center, they're probably going to see bald eagles.
When you talk about, or when you think about the conservation efforts that have taken place locally around there that have led to this increase in population, like, what are some of the things that stand out to you that it got us here?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, the Montezuma National Wildlife Refuge was the home to the very first bald eagle reintroduction project anywhere in this country. And that occurred from 1976 to 1980. You know, prior to that, we had banned DDT, which was the awful pesticide which was poisoning bald eagles and so many other different birds and other wildlife, started to protect their habitat and provide clean air and clean water for these birds and, of course, people as well. But we still needed to do more. Bald eagles needed more help. And so as part of this bald eagle reintroduction program, scientists back in the 70s brought young bald eagles, just a few months old, from places where the bald eagle population was more significant. And that population in these other areas, such as Alaska, places like Maryland, and the Midwest states out by Minnesota and Wisconsin, they could withstand scientists bringing some young birds from those areas to places like New York. And so for that four-year period, we brought 23 young bald eagles to the Montezuma National Wildlife Refuge, hand-fed them using a bald eagle hand puppet. We didn't want the new bald eagles to be imprinted on humans or lose their fear of humans, which they naturally have. And as a result of that, instincts kicked in. They learned how to fly on their own. They learned how to hunt fish on their own. And now we can proudly say that there are well over 400 pairs of bald eagles in New York State, and about two dozen bald eagle pairs nesting now within the Montezuma Wetlands Complex.
Incredible stuff. What climate do they prefer? Bald eagles, what's the preferred climate for bald eagles?
They're pretty adaptable. They're found in just about every state in this country with the exception of Hawaii. So from Alaska all the way down to Florida, they can be found, and New York remains a stronghold for these birds. During the winter time, They will congregate in these areas where you can find liquid water, and that's how they're going to get fish, which is their primary food source. So Montezuma is a great place. The Finger Lakes region, especially those deepest Finger Lakes like Cayuga and Seneca and Canandaigua that don't freeze over entirely, going to be places you can find them. And then, as we've talked about in the past, Onondaga Lake remains that stronghold, yeah, where we actually just got an update from one of my colleagues out there who has found 36 bald eagles at one time along that southern shoreline of Onondaga Lake, right in downtown Syracuse.
And obviously they aren't territorial in any way, shape, or form. If they're intermingling in somewhat same areas?
Well, not this time of year. It's not the breeding season yet. Although, I say that, when we were doing the survey this past a few weeks ago, me and my colleagues at the Montezuma Audubon Center went out to the swamp to check on the bald eagle nest that's there, and we saw an adult eagle bringing nesting material back to that nest. So that's a sign that they're starting to get ready for the breeding season. They might have some courtship activities going on where the adults come together with talons and kind of circle down towards the ground and then release. It's kind of like hand-holding, right, for humans on a date. Courtship is about ready to start, if it hasn't already, for the bald eagle. And then typically we think of the February timeframe, mid to late February, as the breeding season, so that in March we have eggs, and by spring we have young eaglets in the nest.
Impressive stuff. One thing you wanted to talk about today was winter bird feeding, which I think is important because we see the bird feeders out year-round, but maybe not always the best to have them out year-round. Talk to us about some of the do's and don'ts associated with that.
Yeah, well, winter is a great time to feed birds. It might be cold and snowy outside, and people may not want to venture out into those types of elements to experience birds. And so by placing bird feeders in your yard or on your apartment balcony even, or townhouse balcony, you can bring birds closer to you, which is always fun. And birds, any time of year you see birds, I think it's a great experience. They're singing year-round, they're beautiful, and of course they get to fly, which is unique. We can't do that on our own. So I wanted to highlight some things that people can think about when they're thinking about putting out bird feeders during the wintertime. And first thing that I found is the feeder type is really important. We have a lot of gray squirrels, mm-hmm, in the Finger Lakes region, and gray squirrels love to eat birdseed. Well, we have found that if you get a caged tube feeder, that will prevent the squirrels from eating all of the seed in that feeder. Now, they may jump up onto that cage, which is surrounding the tube where the seed is, but they won't be able to reach through the small openings of the cage to get at that seed. But the birds are small enough, they can reach through that cage to get at the seed. So squirrels eventually figure that out and will just stop going up onto the caged feeder and just stay on the ground, and they might eat the seed that's dropped onto the ground, and that's okay, but they won't clean you out,
right.
which is a problem. Another couple of feeders that you can put out this time of year would be suet cake cages. So suet cakes are made out of fat, and there's a lot of protein and carbohydrates in that, and this is a great time to put it out during this really cold period of the year. It won't thaw out, it won't melt, and it won't cause problems for birds. So putting a suet cake out is great. It provides them with a lot of nutrition that they're going to need to get through these cold winter months. And then you could also put out a thistle sock. So thistle seed is really an important food source for species like the American goldfinch. And they're a small yellow and black songbird. Now, if you fill up these socks with thistle seed, then primarily it's just those goldfinches that are going to come and nibble through those little openings in the sock to get at that seed. So if you put out that thistle seed plus maybe black oil sunflower seed in your caged tube feeder, then you're talking about a variety, probably close to a dozen different species of songbirds that will come to your yard or your community area and enjoy all that food. We definitely recommend people stay away from the mixes of seed. The mixes oftentimes are filled with filler that will not provide birds with the vital nutrition that they're going to need. So if you stay with straight black oil sunflower and thistle seed, you're helping the birds, and birds are going to increase the, you know, make you happier by coming to your backyard.
And you're referring to the stuff, I would assume, that a lot of stores are selling, that kind of in mass product. How hard is it to track down the types of feed that you're talking about, which are just sort of exclusive sunflower plus a couple other things that are really good for birds altogether?
Oh, it's not hard at all to find black oil sunflower seed and thistle seed. You can go to a lot of our kind of nature stores. You can go to lumber stores, even hardware stores, and find this type of seed. You can go to supermarkets even and find this type of seed. And then in terms of feeders, we actually sell feeders at Montezuma Audubon Center. We have a small nature store. So we have these cage tube feeders as well as the thistle socks that really work well. We have found, you know, through trial and error, that these are the two best resources to bring birds into your life.
Two questions there on that front. When, you know, obviously any time of year, I would suppose you can have a feeder out. When in the spring do we see that cutoff of when maybe take it down because, you know, there's plenty of food and resources for birds? And then also this time of year, February, what are the most likely species you're going to see a lot of in backyards around the Finger Lakes?
Right. Well, let's start there. Common backyard birds or community birds where you have feeders up. Northern cardinals and black-capped chickadees are definitely common. You might have blue jays and woodpeckers. There's a white-breasted nuthatch, which is a common feeder bird and in many of our communities throughout the Finger Lakes region. And then you've got some birds that will be found underneath feeders. They may not pick off the seed that's in the feeder, but they'll scavenge the seed that's been dropped down to the ground. And those are species like the dark-eyed junco, and mourning doves and American tree sparrows. So there's quite a variety of birds that can be found during the winter months. Now, as we progress through the winter and throughout the spring, it takes a while for our weather to warm up and for the plants to respond and start growing and producing food for birds and other wildlife. So by the end of the spring, June-ish, we typically will take down our seed feeders at Montezuma Audubon Center. There's ample food for birds out there. Now, and then we can transition to feeders like nectar feeders for ruby-throated hummingbirds and other birds like Baltimore Oriole. We'll put out orange feeders filled with nectar. You can even cut an orange in half and put that out for Baltimore Orioles as we get into the June and July timeframe. So, you can feed birds all throughout the year if you'd like, and maybe just change it up a bit based on the habitat that's out there and the food sources for those birds.
Speaking of one of those birds that you mentioned just now, the white-breasted nuthatch is our species spotlight for this month. Tell us a little bit about that bird.
Yeah, that's a year-round resident for us across the Finger Lakes region. It's a fairly small songbird, maybe just 5 or 6 inches or so in length, so about the size of a sparrow. And it's mostly white in color, white and gray. So having mostly white feathers, gray feathers, its large dark eye really stands out. And it comes regularly to black oil sunflower seed feeders. It will also come to thistle seed feeders on occasion. Now, the really interesting thing about this bird, I find, is that it's quite an acrobat, because whether it's going up, climbing up a tree, or climbing down a tree, it's always going head first, which is kind of unique in our bird world. So even if you can't see the plumage of this bird and you see a bird maybe going head first up and then head first down, the trunk of the tree, rest assured, that's the white-breasted nuthatch.
That is one way to stand out. Let's talk a little bit about a database. We were talking about it before we came on. It's kind of like a spring primer. Walk us through what this is, how it works, and how it's sort of aimed at creating a bit of a habitat around you, right?
That's right. I'm talking about the Audubon's Plants for Birds database. Now, here we are, third week of January, so we're still 2 months away from spring, and really another 3+ months away from thinking about planting anything in the ground. We're not thinking about that until maybe early May. Yeah. So, but this winter time period is the time to get ready for that spring season and possibly changing up your landscaping and making that area more bird friendly. And so this Plants for Bird database is very simple to use, and you can just go to the Audubon website, audubon.org/plantsforbirds, and the database will pop up. All you have to do is type in your zip code, and several hundred different species of plants will populate in this database that are adapted to the area where you live. Now, several hundred different plants, that's a lot of plants. The great thing about this database, you can narrow down your selection. So if you only want wildflowers, you can say, I don't want that 500 list of different species of plants. I just want wildflowers, maybe a few dozen species of wildflowers. Well, you can select that on the database and narrow down your search. If you wanted plants that maybe produce berries or seeds, you can select those options as well. The other interesting thing is that if you want a particular species or a group of species of birds in your yard, you can select the database that way, and the database will tell you what plants, trees, shrubs, and wildflowers, and native grasses and vines that you can put in your yard. So as people are looking out in their landscape, it might be covered in white still from the snowfall, or it might be turning muddy with the warmer conditions we're experiencing soon here. Think about changing the landscape. Think about making it more bird-friendly and fill it with native plants. The native plants are what will sustain birds as we go through the spring, summer, and upcoming fall months.
And I would imagine this is a very easy way for folks to engage with conservation. The kinds of efforts that folks like you guys are doing on a regular basis year-round right in their own backyard.
That's right. A lot of our habitat restoration projects that take place at Montezuma focus on removing invasive plant species. And after we do that, we plant native vegetation. Now, we're doing this on a large scale. The Montezuma Wetlands Complex is 50,000 acres. Now, that is sizable and very significant. But if we want to continue to move the needle and bring more birds back, increase populations of more birds, then we need more individuals getting involved in conservation efforts. And so this is one way in which people can help protect birds in the places that they need. Simply planting native vegetation, removing lawn, is great, because lawns really don't provide birds with any food, no shelter, but in removing lawn, you're reducing the amount of time spent mowing. Great thing about native plants, they're adapted to this environment, this climate. So you can pretty much plant and walk away. Yeah. So making your life a lot easier.
Conservation isn't just letting things go wild, as it turns out. Let's talk a little bit about birding tours that are happening now and continuing to happen through the rest of winter. Talk to us about those on Wednesdays.
Yeah, Wednesdays in January and February, we're leading these really unique birding excursions. We've got two different types of birding excursions that are going on. And all this is on our website. I encourage people to go to montezuma.audubon.org, click on our programs tab, and they'll see these programs and all sorts of other programs that we're offering right on through the winter months. But we're leading these Cayuga Lake birding excursions on Wednesdays. That's typically taking place at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's about 2-hour excursion. We take people in our large 12-passenger van and drive them around the best birding hotspots of the north end of Cayuga Lake. Now, why Cayuga Lake? Well, most of Montezuma is frozen right now. We've just coming out of our cold snap here. We were below freezing this entire week, and so most of our marshes and many of our waterways have frozen over. So the ducks, geese, swans have moved just south down to the north end of Cayuga Lake, where they can access fish, and they have ample habitat down there. So we're going to kind of focus on the places from Cayuga Lake State Park up to the extreme north end of the lake in an area called Mud Lock, right along the canal system there, and then down the east side of the lake to towns of Cayuga and Union Springs. So we'll make three, maybe four stops along the way to see what could be thousands of waterfowl species. We usually see birds of prey like bald eagles and northern harriers in these areas as well, songbirds too. So really unique opportunity to learn about some birding areas that are off the beaten trail. People may not think of Cayuga Lake as a birding hotspot. Well, it is a very important bird area, and this winter season is a great time to see why. The other types of birding tours that we're leading this time of year are the raptor rambles, and these are kind of a newer tour for us. But again, Wednesdays, and typically late in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, we'll venture out driving people around the Montezuma Wetlands Complex looking for eagles and falcons and hawks. And you know, we'll be out there till about 5 o'clock, so that's when some owls start to come out and start hunting and even start hooting it up. So all of these tours are just $15 a person. Registration is on our website, and again, that's montezuma.audubon.org. Click on that programs tab to see these excursions as well as so many other different programs.
And of course, we were talking about it before we came on. It's been a tough winter for snowshoeing. Yeah. Not a lot of snowshoeing has happened. Tell us what happens with those events. Do they get transitioned into just walks without snowshoes?
That's right. These on the canal snowshoeing excursions, which we've been proud to offer now for 3 years, have taken on a different form this winter for obvious reasons. We just have not been able to hold on to that snowfall long enough to lead snowshoeing excursions. So we've transitioned them to guided nature hikes, still focusing on birds. We still are finding animal signs out there in the woods and grasslands and around our marshes, introducing people to all these amazing birds or the wildlife and the places that they need. And also we talk about how Montezuma is managed. It's not Mother Nature take its course. No, we have to manage, keep invasive species out, keep native vegetation planted and thriving so that these birds have ample food and shelter to survive.
Yeah, still very rewarding stuff. Family-friendly February breaks. Obviously, kids will be off school in a few weeks here for about a week. What do we have going on out at the Audubon Center?
Yeah, we're going to be offering two owl pellet dissection programs. Great for the whole family. This is for during the February school break, and this is a unique opportunity to learn more about our owls in the Finger Lakes region. Now, owl pellets, first of all, they are a regurgitated clump of fur and bones that owls cannot digest. Owls prefer to eat small mammals, medivoles, shrews, and field mice. And they can digest a lot of those critters, but not all. And so after the owl has had its meal, after a certain period of time, it will regurgitate an owl pellet. And we have found them over the years. We've kept them in the freezer, and so they're completely sterilized as well, harmless to humans. But it's a lot of fun to dissect these 2 to 3 inch owl pellets to learn about what the owls are eating at Montezuma Audubon Center. So we'll kind of go through that process, and it's fun to try to piece together the bones to see if you can figure out if was that a shrew or a field mouse. The other thing we're going to do is going to take folks out for a guided excursion in the owl habitat to see if we can find other signs of owls and maybe even catch a glimpse or hear owls hooting it up during this winter time. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we're also going to be offering up a snow day excursion. So again, fun for the whole family. If we have enough snow on the ground, on February 22nd, we'll take folks out for a guided snowshoeing excursion for about a mile or so on the trails, looking at animal tracks, the mammals that are active. They're leaving a lot of tracks and signs for us. The birds are quite active, and sometimes they're hopping around on the ground. It's fun to try to piece together the sign and what was going on with the birds and the other wildlife. And then we're also going to be taking a close look at snow. What is snow and how does it form? And we may even be doing some scientific experiments. Again, great for the whole family during February break. Everything's on our website and registration is quite simple. Just go to that website, montezuma.audubon.org.
Good stuff. Chris, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Josh.
Hey, that's going to do it for this edition of Inside the FLX. For more, check out the show on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. And we will be back next week. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.